Hello and welcome to the very 224th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, live from Tom's Lounge.
Wow.
With two boys being sleepy sat on sofas.
Well, I'm not sleepy actually. Tom's quite awake.
I'm very sleepy.
I'm a little awake, I'd say. I'd say I'm neutral on the matter.
You've had two coffees this morning.
I'm on my second one and I'm waiting for my ADHD medication to kick in.
You've also been looking at like quite bright lights while you've been filming B-roll.
Yes.
Which is the way that board game reviewers sort of simulate being in the daytime.
So I'm kind of sleepy because I've been up for a little while and I've actually done some work this morning.
Right.
Whereas you're just sleepy because of...
I'm lazy.
...existence. No, it's residual. It's not that you're lazy. It's just that you've had an ongoing blur of
it's
things.
It's background radiation.
The main thing I am right now is sweaty. So mm-hmm. We're in Tom's lounge. Mm-hmm. I'm sweaty.
Yes.
I'm doing the slightly strange thing that Tom also does.
Yes.
And I don't know if other people do this, but some days, not always, I used to do it a lot more when I worked from home.
Right.
I will treat myself to a shower when I feel like I've done enough work.
Yes.
And so often it would mean I'd have my breakfast, have my coffee, and I would, you know, I used to sit at my desk in my pajamas and my dressing gown. At one point I accidentally streamed myself doing this, so there is evidence of this. And then when it's like, yeah, I've achieved something, I then go and really enjoy a shower.
You're allowed.
And I'm doing that at Tom's house, which arguably crosses a line.
I don't think it crosses a line at all. I've not had a shower this morning.
Great.
I'm a crusty man too. Just two crusty men.
The problem is we're both going to finish recording this fantastic podcast.
And we're going to get in the shower together.
Be like, I need a shower right now to celebrate. And it's going to get heated. Either that's going to happen or there's going to be a fight. This is going to be the last podcast either way, because afterwards things are going to get weird.
This is going to get freaky.
What are we going to talk about today, Tom?
We're going to talk about a whole collection of games. We're going to talk about the rest of the games that we didn't talk about from the UK Games Expo, some other games that we played over there that we enjoyed that we want to talk about more. We're going to talk about Phantom Inc. We're going to talk about Dirty Pig.
Dirty Pig.
And Matt's going to tell us about some games that he played that were made by students.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were odd. I didn't really play them. I just looked at them and was absolutely confounded by them in a wonderful way.
But before we talk about those games, we're going to talk about Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
Matt said that every time we've talked
welcome
about this game.
Welcome to Earth.
Matt said, welcome to Earth.
Get in the your same ass voice. To Earth.
It's a big engine building game where you make a planet, a landscape, an ecosystem.
I mean, I don't know what it is, really.
It
really does seem like it's being quite all-encompassing when it's just called Earth, right? Because let's be real, for most of us, Earth is everything. There is space. There is other things in space.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard the deGrasse Tyson chats about other things.
Yep. Aliens. He loves aliens.
He believes in aliens.
He's an alien freak.
That's his right.
Uh-huh.
But Earth is everything.
Right.
And so I was quite surprised when we started playing this game that mostly just making little plants and mushrooms.
You're mostly making the ground.
It's plants.
It's
really
one of those things where it's called Earth and you kind of expect a lot of the game to be about, like, I don't know, like...
Soil would be a better name.
Yeah, because there's a lot of soil in that game and like
and I mean,
mold
Earth
fungus.
Technically is another word for like...
Yeah.
But I think because when the game is set up, you have these very traditional Euro-y game things.
Yeah.
Like some cards that are objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some pictures of some penguins.
We did.
And some... So the objective cards have some little animals on,
yep.
And there are some ecosystems and some big mountains, and you think, oh, okay, this is the whole planet.
Mm.
But then actually what you're doing is pretty much mainly just plants.
Yeah, well, you're mainly... I think the thematic idea of this game, we should explain what this game is. It's
yes.
a Euro game. It is an engine builder. It is the latest in a sort of long line of games where you get resources, and then because you've got resources, you get more resources, and you pile them onto cards. And you're making a big tableau of cards. And the cards, thematically, as we've alluded to, are kind of like you're building like an ecosystem.
Yes.
And you kind of want cards to like feed off of each other. So you might have a card that like is a plant that produces a bunch of sprouts, and then you have a sort of invasive fungus that feeds off that plant. I don't know if this is a real thing in the game. Probably isn't.
I mean, you're vaguely bang on.
Right, good.
In terms of, yeah, basically you're building a grid. It's a 4x4 grid of cards that
yes.
you build up by continuously growing it out. And when you're then placing these things, you're trying to achieve lots of different things at the same time.
You are.
It's a real smorgasbord of points, options.
It's so many points.
In a very satisfying way. In the fact that basically, yes, you've got perhaps objectives that are to do with the grid and to do with positions on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, you need to have these things in lines, these things in columns.
Yes.
You have cards that then interact with things in the same column or the same row.
Right.
If they meet a criteria.
Yes.
And then you have the fact that these different cards have multiple different ways that they can score you points mm-hmm. in a way that is frankly kind of verging on Dunshire territory.
It's bonkers.
And then also you have like combinations of different types of things, and like you're going to get points if you have lots of these different types, and there's like four or five different categories on the cards. You have some of them that have little symbols at the top depending on what kind of style of ecosystem they yes. are. Another one that's the type of plant or thing that they are,
or bush or fungus.
Another one, and then sometimes they have like words that are just italicized or underlined because there are objectives that involve, like, do you have cards that have a color in the name?
Yeah. Do you have cards that mention like a country in yeah. the name?
I don't know why, but the word beef was underlined yeah, on a number of cards, and I'm like, all right,
then maybe there's a beef scoring bonus.
It's the beefy bonus.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but that's the sort of game we're looking at here. It reminded me immediately of Ark Nova, mm-hmm. which we reviewed a while ago and talked yes. about in the podcast,
yes.
which was very much a let's build a zoo, but nice, but for
but
science.
Good. And it hit that theme pretty on the head. It was nice. You had to actually do conservation in that game.
It was fun.
As well as just having an elephant in a cage.
And it also had that similar thing of, I'm building up this tableau of things. There's mm-hmm. so many things going on. What is going on?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's properly like, you know, you're building an engine in this game. You're building cards that interact with other cards to get you more and more and more stuff over the course of the game. And it definitely, the biggest way it reminded me of Ark Nova was the deck of cards in this game is massive.
It's big.
It's so big. It's the kind of deck of cards that you cannot have as one single deck because it will lose its structural integrity. It needs to be split into two separate smaller decks. And when you're drawing cards, you're not drawing like one or two, you draw like six
yes.
at a time. Like the first thing you do in this game is like draw a hand of like 10 cards and bin off like four of them.
Yes.
You're constantly just cycling all of these cards. You see so many cards in this game that have so much information on them. It's bonko.
But it's fundamentally, the majority of the time, just lots of photographs of plants and fungus. Mm. So it's not like, oh, I'm drawing up 10 cards and then I think, oh, I need like 5 minutes to read all these cards to work out what they do. It's interesting that the way it almost just showers you with cards, because
yes.
initially you go, oh, I've got too many, I've got to look at them all. And towards the end of the game, I had a large hand of cards and I was just glancing at stuff and binning things when it's like, right. Okay, I got to bin three cards. That.
Does
and
it have the symbol I need right now? It. If it doesn't have that symbol, it can go in the bin.
Because you are just getting cards so frequently that you almost just bin them without thinking about it, because you think, yeah, well, I'm looking for something very specific at this point, and if it's not one of those things, chuck it in the compost.
Yes.
Because yes, I think this is the strangest mechanic of this game, is that you are drawing up cards,
oh, yeah.
but you are also composting cards. Mm-hmm. And composted cards get you points at the end of the game.
1 point per card.
You have your own little compost pile.
Yes.
And often you're going to be composting off the deck, these giant decks of cards.
Yeah, like one of the core actions of the game is like you get some soil, which is the resource that you use to like play those
the
cards.
The soil is the money.
Yeah, the soil is the money. Yeah. You need some soil to plant the cards in your grid in the first place. But then it also lets you compost two cards, which is, yeah, take two cards off the top of the deck. Do not look at them.
It's the most confusing thing I've ever been told to
do. And then just put them in the bin.
And you think, what's the... And it's basically like you're just getting points.
Yeah, it's just 2 points.
But there's something very weird about like, and now I'm going to take six cards off the top of the deck that I'm not going to look at and I'm going to put into my personal bin that yes. I will get points from later on.
And initially that was the kind of thing that I thought that was really silly. But then later on you do have some nice little mechanics as to like taking things out of your compost
yes.
bin, using that to like grow little sprouts on your cards as well.
This is what I was most interested in actually. And we'll come back to why in a little bit. But when I first saw this game, when you set it up, I thought, I'm not going to like this game.
No.
And I was very surprised to discover that I did like it quite a lot, which was good. It's
yeah.
good for two reasons.
I mean, it's nice to like things.
It's nice to like things. Uh-huh. It's nice to like things that other people like uh-huh. and are popular because it makes life easier. And also you feel connected to humanity in a way which is difficult when mostly it's Marvel films.
Right.
And also, you know, it's good. It's just good.
I think both of your reasons there were it's good and
yeah,
it's good.
All three, A, B, and C, in conclusion, I like nice times. It's fun to have fun.
It's fun to have fun.
Listen, I like the way that what you were doing was you were building up a tableau of cards that hopefully would interact with each other in
yes.
clever ways. And then you'd be building up things on these cards, putting little cubes of green growth, mm-hmm. putting little weird towers of something else.
They're called
canopies.
I think those are called growths.
Right.
The green cubes are called sprouts.
Cool.
And the little hats you put on your growths are called canopies.
Right.
It's normal.
It's nebulous wooden things that go on cards that get you points.
Yeah.
But what I liked about this was the fact that you were doing this, but all of the economies were recyclable in a way. It had it had a nice ecosystem vibe of the fact that you would like put lots of these green cubes all over your cards and you filled up all of your slots for the green cubes, right?
Yeah.
Quite early. And you're like, whoa. But then you get cards that purposefully almost eat them up again and remove them in exchange for allowing you to do other things. And being able to have this compost pile that you're growing and then eating into that compost pile and throwing away points to be able to draw up more cards.
Yeah.
And I just like the way that it had that Eurogame thing of being like, boom, you've developed a system that explodes and makes all of these things happen.
Yeah.
But then that happening quite early in the game, which usually you get this exponential growth in the last turn of the game. As you say, you know, you get 3,000 sheep now.
Yeah,
what you do.
Just pump your engine in the last few turns.
And it's like, if the game went on for two more turns, then you would be like infinity sheep and everyone's minds would dissemble on the table.
And you'd also be probably quite bored at that point.
You'd be so tired.
Yes.
And you'd need a calculator. But in this, it lets you explode quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And the fun thing about that is it then means that you have to, you know, trim back. And it did have a kind of quite florary vibe in terms of going, well, okay, my green cube engine has now filled up my table with green cubes.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, I've got to find out a way now to be getting a card that's going to allow me to remove these green cubes again so that I can then replenish in a way that isn't wasteful.
Yes.
And then this comes down to the kicker of the game in the fact that, Tom, it's never your turn in this game, is it really? It's never your turn.
Yes. We should
but
explain.
But also, it is always your turn.
Yeah. So the core way that you do actions in this game is you choose one of the four actions available. There's one that plants cards. There's one that gets you soil. There's one that gets you the little sprout things, the green cubes on cards. And there's one that gets you growth, which are the big trunks on cards. And then once you've done that, or while you're doing that, that person over across the other side, well, everyone else at the table will also get to take a sort of smaller version of the action. And then, once you've done that, you'll activate all of your cards of that color. So there's a green action, a red action, a blue action, a yellow action. And all your cards will have a little ability that's red, green, blue, yellow at the bottom. And you will go from top left to bottom right, bam, 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 activating all your cards one after the other that share the color with the action that you or your opponent just took.
Yes.
And so it is, you are constantly doing things in this game. Like when we talk about games that have parallel play, this is like the end game of that, in that you are always doing something and you are always nudging your opponent that, like, have you finished doing your turn? Is it my turn? Is it both of our turns once? Always.
This is a game where with two players we just about managed to keep on top of whose go it was.
Yes.
But I suspect that if you're playing with four, like, this is a game where you really do need the first player token, and the first player token actually is there not only to be like, it's my turn, but it's my turn and this is the action I just chose. Because honestly, you wouldn't know, because it's like someone's activated blue. You'd be like, well, I wanted to activate blue, so maybe it was my go. Did I activate blue?
Well, it's because very quickly, what action you pick, like, you know, because red gets you, you know, some soil, blue gets you some scrubs, that side of things becomes irrelevant quite quickly. Because you're more focused on what your tableau does and what the individual actions in that do. You're not thinking, I want to activate blue so I can get some scrubs. You're thinking about it, scrubs, scrubs, scrubs. You're thinking about blue because you want to activate the nine blue cards you've got in a row.
Exactly.
And I want to touch upon the fact that I really love the way that this game has, the way that you activate left to right, top to bottom, reading style, as you put it.
Book style.
Book style.
Traditional book style, not Hebrew book style.
Traditional book style. Or Japan book style, manga book style.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like it's, when I say traditional book style, I mean the way we do it here in Britain.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that is how we view reality.
God,
because we are big old Dumbos.
you do it traditional British book style. You go left, right, top, to bottom. And I love that because I think there's something really nice about how in other engine building games, you'll be like, my thing over here activates my thing over here. And you're cross-referencing lots of information in like a big non-linear way. But the fact that this is just linearly, you just activate each card at a time, means it's simpler to build an engine and easier to read that engine because you can see the ins and outs and you see the order they happen in, because it's always going to go exactly the same way. And I think that's nice.
I think it is nice. Yeah, I think that's, I'm not going to argue against your point there. I think it is nice.
I think it's nice too.
I think that the way all of the cross-referencing and all of the different systems that are interlocking happens in one place is actually very pleasing.
Yes.
I think Ark Nova was cool. I liked it, but it you do get to a point where you have this sort of big table presence of lots of different systems and things, and you've got your little maps and you've got that, and you've got these different tracks in different places.
Yes.
That is a different kind of exciting, right? But there was something here about the fact that everything was just in your little tableau. Mm-hmm. You were looking at these things constantly. You were constantly just checking for the symbols, checking for that. In a way, actually, the objectives, because so many things were happening and so many cards had so many different symbols, I found that when I was checking to see if I'd done any of this, the collective objectives we had to try and race towards, it was more like playing bingo. It was like I knew I was roughly going towards trying to do them, but then I was like, oh, have I done that yet? And you'd be like, 1, 2, 3, no, I don't have, blah. You know, I wasn't
not
like
bingo yet.
I wasn't on it like a hawk in the way that usually I've been, like, now I have 5, great, I get it. It was like you kind of had to remind yourself, and it was amazing to me that it wasn't an absolutely overwhelming head mash. And I think it could have been if I built my engine differently. I think the reason it kind of works for me is the fact that because cards have these different colors of actions.
Yeah.
Being like, okay, this does red actions, this does blue actions. And because those actions are roughly speaking similar in terms of what they do, it meant that it wasn't when you were going left to right and then down through your tableau and doing all of these different potential actions or not, choosing what you wanted to do. It didn't feel like the order of it was super important, because it would be like, maybe for red actions, there'd be lots of like discarding cards.
Yes.
Or for this, it'd be lots of placing cubes. So you didn't tend to have that like bottleneck of going, okay, and then I get this resource, which I then spend on this resource. It did feel a little bit more linear. The thing that is not true for that is those multicolor cards where they are like, activate on any color.
Yeah.
And those ones could be a bit more wild card. Yeah. And those ones you could allow yourself to really have an engine where it's like, I get that and I spend that. But as you say, because the numbers of things were frequently quite large.
Yes.
It wouldn't be like, oh, and then I get exactly one of these sprout cubes that allows me to then spend that sprout cube to get that. It would be like, and now I get 14 sprouts. You know, it would be like, I don't need all of them.
Yeah.
But that's cool. And for me, the game became about almost trying to eat up the explosive growth, because I knew that, you're right, the actual bonus resources you get from taking an action would become less relevant as the game went on, because actually the most of the reward you would get would be from this incredible combination of, oh cool, I now get to activate all of my orange powers.
Yes, and I'll get a million of them.
But we still did run out of soil money, or run out of something we needed.
We did.
And that meant that I had situations where I was like, right, I've got too many sprout cubes. I've filled up all my cards. I need to activate this thing so I can eat them all up, because I know that at some point in the next few turns, Tom is going to have to activate the blue thing, because he's going to need...
Yes.
He's going to
yes.
run out of that. And I wanted to make sure that when someone else activated something, I was going to be able to reap the rewards.
Yeah.
And not have that horrible feeling of like overflow of, oh, I could have planted 4 more cubes there, but I couldn't because they were full.
And there's a lot of like nice kind of juicy theme in those interactions as well. Like when you talk about, you know, destroying a load of like, or spending a load of like your growth that's on your cards because you know you're going to get it back. The way that you do that is like by like a volcano erupting or something.
Yes.
So it'll be like the card, you have these event cards you can play at any time.
That mechanic is so dumb.
It's lovely. It's like, wait, how's it dumb?
Well, it's not. It's, I think it makes sense. And I think actually the fact that it's like you can play them anytime makes sense, because basically the reason they've done that is so it doesn't slow the game down.
Yes.
Because it means that basically they don't affect anyone else. It's
I'll
just
say
like,
there's a lot of stuff in this game that's pointed directly towards not slowing the game down.
Yes.
They know that something like this could be like super crunchy and difficult for your brain, and they're like, take that all out.
But
make
I think,
it as quick as possible.
I think my head reading of, I think it's my fault, but it's also just the context of games and the way they are. When somebody says, oh, these cards, these are like event cards, you can play them at any time, makes me think it's going to be a bit of a like, stop, take that, or like, zap.
Oh, right, I see.
The fact they're all quite exciting things, like flooding, or like supernova, or like firestorm.
Volcano eruption.
It's. I was just doing the Yu-Gi-Oh thing and just kept saying stop and like holding up a card to Tom's face, and which caused me no end of entertainment because none of the cards affected him in any way.
Yeah.
And
it's like, stop, I'm going to go and spend 6 cubes to get 5. Cards, great, good for you.
Which I found quite, for things that seemed quite catastrophic or whatever, you're all making your own earth. Fine.
Yes.
I mean, no, but it is good that it means it's basically gives you a bit of flexibility to be fiddling with your own economy and having a go. I mean, it's just never not your go. The amount of times you had to say, are you finished yet, Matt? Have you finished your turn? And I'm like, no, I'm just finishing your turn. And then I'll take my turn. It's just bizarre, but
super strange.
It does fall into that cachet of like that area of games where you're just being kept so constantly busy by things
yes.
that it's hard to work out how good it is and mm-hmm. how much fun you're actually having, because it is just like a constant smooth dopamine slide.
Yeah, and it's super smooth. It's one of the smoothest of, like, the teach is so quick. The iconography is a little clumsy sometimes, but it's just it's a really, really quick teach that you don't really need to clarify much during.
No.
And it's a very, like, you know, it keeps you constantly entertained. There is no downtime. It's one of the smoothest ones of these
yeah.
that I've seen in a while. Like, it's certainly smoother than something like Wingspan, maybe smoother than Ark Nova if you... You know, with Ark Nova, it's a much heavier game.
Yes.
This is quite light, really.
Yeah, it's light but fiddly.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff you could be digging into. And again, like, the number of bits of iconography and numbers on the cards is sort of almost a joke at times.
Yes.
But I didn't have to check the manual anytime we were playing.
No.
It was just a case of going, what does that mean? And then going, oh, I see
it
the symbol now.
It probably means
this. I see the symbol now. Yes. And there's some good player aids on the bottom of the board mm-hmm. in terms of all the iconography. So it's very neat. It's very nippy. I really enjoyed it. And I think that, like, it's interesting. One of the things it does, I think because, as I say, all the economies are semi-edible, right?
Yes.
Is the way I'd put it. Because of all of the point scoring things are semi-edible, it meant that the end of the game was interesting in a way that often these games aren't. Often these games, the end, the pudding at the end of the pathway is... You know, you get a million things. Do you get a million points? Whereas, like, halfway through the game, it's like, I'm drawing up 12 cards. I'm planning 18 sprout cubes.
Yes.
It means that that isn't the interesting part about the end of the game. The interesting part about the end of the game for me is the fact that you are constantly trying to optimize your system. So, yes, I've finished all of my canopies. I've put all my little colorful yes. things on top of the wooden things. But maybe I want to actually destroy some of those mm-hmm. because if somebody else uses that action, then I'm going to get to put them on again.
Right.
And it had that fun, like, not racing line, a kind of rubber banding, you know, that kind of like... Mario Kart thing of not wanting to be in first position until the blue shell has been fired.
Yeah.
And then sneaking ahead of wanting to, like, try and work out when the game was going to end.
Yes.
In a way which was quite fun, of being like, do I want to treat this now as my final board state, you know? Mm, do I want to start putting new paint onto the canvas, or is someone going to blow the whistle and be like, that's the end?
That's it, it's the end of the game.
Which was interesting. It wasn't like rushing to get everything done before the game ended. It was trying to work out when the game was going to end so I could have my, like, and now this is the finished state.
Yes.
And I'm going to stop eating my sprouts and I'm going to stop destroying my canopies for cards.
You're like showing it off in the best light. It's like you're sort of cleaning the flat before visitors arrive. You're like polishing up your thing for that last one turn where it counts.
Yeah.
And then you can, you know, there's this idea of it, if it were to continue indefinitely, it would continue eating itself and growing and eating itself and growing over and over and over again. I think the theme of this game, I was not sold on it initially, but the fact that everything's so recyclable, and the fact that the events are like big lava eruption, you have to burn down all your sprouts, but then you're going to get like loads of new cards and like mm-hmm. opportunities for growth. I think it's very like, there's something about the whole game that feels like cyclical, and the engine building kind of really does make it feel like an ecosystem more than a lot of other games like this that I've played.
And I just think that the way that game ends, of being like, it ends, you know, various different ways it can end, but mainly it's like, you know, someone's filled their tableau. Is that the only way, actually?
Yeah, when the game ends, when someone fills their tableau.
When you've got all 16 cards in place, the game's basically finished the round. And the way that, you have this kind of ebb and flow of growth and trying to have the perfect ending position for points just meant that, like, it wasn't like a Euro game where it's like, and now the game ends. Usually it's like the wheels are about to come off the car, everyone's going at 90 miles an hour, everyone has 4,000 sheep, that's enough,
come on now
and stop.
Yes.
How many do you get? Whereas in this, it felt like ending the game. When I decided to end the game, it felt like a real decision of being like, and I kind of didn't want to end it there because I didn't feel like I had the perfect state.
Right.
But it was that interesting decision of like, do I want to be the person who takes control and ends it now, or do I want to risk not having control of when it ends?
Yeah.
And that's really interesting, that actually, like, as a decision, usually it's like, and now the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have games where people might try and rush the end for various reasons. But in this one, it was that tough thing of having that, like, for a game that maybe is quite solitary, really, in terms of you're just playing your own game.
Very much so, yeah.
It was nice to have that decision right at the end of being like, am I done?
Yeah.
Should I
stop
touching
this? You can see that I've
got
like four spaces empty on my board, and you're like, yep, now's the time. Let's
exactly,
go.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I came away from this game, like the first time I played it, you know, quite down on it in a way, because I found it like, I compare this as a sort of big fiddly beast, something that I've been playing a lot of recently, which should be the review. It's the review for this week, I think.
Right.
Maybe, which is a game called Iki, mm-hmm. which is very like much more streamlined, slimmed down, very, very tight decisions. There's no excess. There's not much meat on the bone. It's very like scrappy. And something like Earth, which is so decadent in how many cards you get and how much information you're passing. I was quite down on it the first time I played it.
Yeah.
But every time I've come away from it, I have had a very pleasant time. And I think it does what it's doing very well. I don't know how it will bear out over multiple plays.
I'm interested to investigate it more. Like, I think that like, I had the same thing of being like, well, I don't want to draw 10 cards. But then actually, when you're trying to meet an objective and you need a specific card, sometimes just drawing 10 cards and just milling through that giant deck, there's just to find what you want and chucking everything else in the compost.
I definitely found myself having like an in tray and out tray of a hand. Yes. It was like, these are the ones I care about. Everything else can go in this big pile, ripe for composting later on.
And it is quite satisfying if you have a giant deck like that to have a system where it's not just like, oh, I've got my hands too big, discard cards. Being like actually encouraging you, being like, yeah,
do. But that's put them
like,
in the bin.
You know, you've got 20 cards in hand. Like, get rid of 15 of them. That's 15 points.
You're winning.
Like, I want to throw it all in the bin. If we could only get people to recycle like that, then the world. Anyway,
should we move on? Talk about some different games.
We should move on. I mean, I think I didn't cover why I didn't expect to like it and why I almost, if I'm honest, didn't want to like it. But I think we might come back to this one. I think it's interesting.
That's a little sneak peek.
Sneaky peeky.
Sneaky peeky.
Of an interesting thingy. Next up on this big old wheel we call the planet Earth.
Wow.
Which we are all on, listening to this podcast.
Right.
It's the one thing that unites us all. Billions of people on this planet all listen to the Shut Up and Sit Down board game podcast. And I think that's beautiful.
That's lovely.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the games we played at the UK Games Expo.
Small games. Little ones this time.
Yes.
We talked a lot about Earth, and now we're going to talk a little bit about these games.
A little bit about small games.
Yes.
UK Games Expo, of course, is short for the UK Games Exponential Growth.
Uh-huh. So it does get bigger and bigger.
Small games, but in the future, these games will probably be big enough that all of the billions of people on the Earth can listen to the podcast inside one giant board game box.
You leave them in a dark room for a while, these games, they'll get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah.
They'll use up all your little sprouts that you've planted on other cards until they become
And
huge.
Then you need to eat the cardboard box just to survive.
What game are we going to talk about first? Phantom Inc.? Let's talk about Phantom Inc.
Phantom
so this,
Inc.
I don't know what you describe it as. A little party word game, hidden information. It's not hidden information.
It's
a bit of hidden information.
We might as well just, you know, eat the bullet straight away here.
Compare it to another game.
And say that really this is a game in the genre of
Decrypto. Codenames.
Codenames.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Crosstalk.
Crosstalk.
Which is a bit of an unloved goose. In the world.
It feels like there's more of these games, but that's all the ones I can think of right now.
Those are the ones
now.
We go to. And I think therein lies the rub of this, in the fact that actually I think that most of these games thrive consistently because they are different with different people and they feel different with different people.
Yes.
And actually, like, one of the reasons I love Decrypto and keep coming back to it is because I always feel like I've got the measure of that game, and then I play it with some different people, and the way that the game shapes and the way it goes is different.
Some people are freaks.
Yes, exactly.
They're Decrypto freaks.
Some people are Decrypto freaks.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes people are being so obvious that you think it can't be that. And it is that. and that, again, just swipes you sideways. The issue is, these are little box things that reliably do quite
good
a good thing.
Yes.
That trying to muscle into that space is tough.
You've got to be really good.
You do got to be really good.
And I don't know if Phantom Inc. is really good.
I don't know if it is either.
But it is pleasing.
It is pleasing. Mm-hmm. And also, Phantom Inc. has something else going for it.
Yes.
The fact that it has a touch of that Mysterium magic vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mysterium is a game that we reviewed many moons ago, and we've played a lot, and we've done a lot of things on. It's a game where one person is a ghost trying desperately to give everybody puzzle clues to help them solve murders, and getting increasingly frustrated whilst being silent for upward of an hour and a half. I really love Mysterium. The more time passes, the more I think about it, the more I play it. I have gone slightly colder on it because I think it's slightly too fiddly.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It does go on for a bit too long sometimes.
Yeah.
But I still think at its core, it is a magical thing that there's nothing quite like with the right group.
Yes.
The fun thing about this, of course, is two players, one person on each team, get to be an ghost.
Ooh.
Which is just thematically fun.
It is.
Pretending to be an ghost, cool. Pretending to be dead, I don't know about that.
Right.
That's less fun.
Yeah. Okay, but sure.
I'm a ghost.
And you've got a ghost friend?
Sure I do.
That's hell. That's hella cool.
Hella cool, right? Have you ever seen the documentary Casper?
It was the documentary Ghostbusters.
So, Phantom Inc., let's be... We've been slightly negative off the boot here. It's a beautiful box.
It's lovely.
It's a beautiful game.
Yes.
And this, as a promise, is you open up this beautiful, gorgeous box that has a little bit of a kind of like sexy seance vibe.
Luigi vibe.
Luigi vibe. The Luigi board.
In his mansion with his ghosts.
Yep. And effectively, one person on each team is a ghost, and they are both trying to give their team clues that will help them both determine a word.
One word.
One word.
That's the same for both teams.
Yes.
It's just one word that everyone has to guess.
So both ghosts see a word, and then the teams have these decks of cards that allow them to basically ask their ghost a specific question.
We played this game a little bit wrong. We did it where you drew, like, I think 3 cards and picked one.
Right.
You're meant to draw, like, 7 or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
You're meant to draw way more questions for your ghost. So we played it a little bit more restrictive style.
Right.
Which might impact our final
verdict. That might impact things. And, I mean, this isn't really a final verdict. And I think that would change things, actually. Because
sure.
I think that having that limited option almost, in a way, made it a lot funnier.
Right.
Because people knew they were asking a question that might be useless. And I think that, like, there might be something there in the fact that it did feel at times quite decrypto-y because of that. Because
right.
of the fact that it's like, you have your team asking a question they know is not helpful at this point. But
yep.
you also know it's not helpful. And so trying to answer that question in maybe a cryptic way...
Yes.
...was...
That will throw off the other team.
Exactly.
Right.
So the fun thing about this is that when you answer the question...
The
ghost answers the question, and they do it traditional ghost style, seance-y vibes, of you just start writing out the word, but you do it one letter at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you write the answer out one letter at a time until the people around you say... I think they had to say silencio.
Silencio!
Which felt a little bit too Harry Potter for me, so we just went for stop.
Yeah, shut it.
Just stop, ghost. We've had enough. And it means that effectively, people are asking a question, and they maybe, as soon as they start to get a clue of what they might think it is, they sort of know what the answer might be. So often you'd have somebody just writing one letter, and then the team going, stop.
Yeah, because they've got an idea.
Because they think, okay... You know, in ours, we had a thing where it was, I think I was trying to get them to guess a thermos flask, and which was tough. But at one point, they were like, what's it similar to or whatever? And I put M down, and they were immediately like, stop, because they were like, mug. Like,
right,
they,
okay,
you know, they were on the right track, they and the they right were track. Like, that must well, be mug.
Yes, for like a good example of something, I remember it was, I think the ghosts were trying to get everyone to guess chocolate.
Yes.
And it was, what does it taste like, was the question. And I think it was you put, yeah. you put an M, and then there was a pause.
And then another M. Yeah.
And they were like, stop, it's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
It's
like, how many M's do I have to write before they... Yeah. So... That is fun, and I like the fact that because the other team don't have the context of the questions being secretly shown
yes.
to the ghost, all you have is to look at the answers that you've got, which often are just one letter or two letters, and mm-hmm. You think you might know what those words are, but maybe you're wrong.
Uh-huh.
And then looking
You're
probably wrong. And then looking at the other team's things without any context.
Right.
Just being like, well, they've got a D, and then an M-E... And then a T,
mm-hmm.
and trying to work out what the common threads could be and what
yes.
these words could reference. And again, it had that delightful mysterium thing of just people having no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But because teams were going off and kind of whispering amongst each other, often the ghost wouldn't be involved in that because they couldn't be. So I mean, you kind of had no idea if your team were on the right track or not a lot of the time.
Right, right.
Until they maybe asked the right question, and then you're like, okay, you're getting it here. But mostly you're like, I hope they've got it. And what I really liked about this game actually was the solidarity you have as ghost siblings. Of you both know what the word is. You're both looking at each other to go, these people are idiots. They've got no idea. But then you're also occasionally looking at something you've just written, and the other person's looking as if to go, what?
Yeah.
But at the same time, sometimes you do two letters and they just like,
they go,
and they just nod and go, yeah, okay, yeah. And that's fun, of having this like shared problem of mm-hmm. you're both, technically you're on the team with these people, but really you're kind of on team ghost.
Yeah, on a team together, just hoping they'll get it somehow.
Which in a game where you have to be silent for like 20 minutes, because it's quite quick,
mm-hmm.
it's quite nice to have that silent nods and that knowing kind of camaraderie.
Sure.
I think it was quite good. I don't think it was like super strong. I think I prefer Crosstalk, which has a similar setup of being two players who are the clue givers and then each team trying to work out the same thing.
Mm.
I might be wrong about that. You might be trying to work out different words. I'm not entirely sure. I played it once.
Disclaimer,
I played it once with Board Game Barrage at a convention. And the main thing I remember is it was tremendously fun.
That's good.
And the other thing I remember is that you had a little board with powers you could tick off with a pen.
Right.
And the powers were really interesting. And it allowed you to do things like once per game, you could give a fake answer.
Mm.
And then you basically your team would know that that answer was nonsense.
Yes.
But the other team would still be using it to try and decode.
I see.
And having things like that, of being able to just having powers that allow you to throw people off, it just gave it a little bit more of that decrypto spice.
Yes.
Of going, but hang on a minute, maybe this is a red herring. And then you're sitting there silently going, oh no. And they slowly unpicked your devious ploys.
I think as far as this game fits in the like sort of, because it's you know, in the one of those games canon, uh-huh. It's like, I think for us, Decrypto is always going to be the top dog, even maybe above Codenames, as far as those kinds of games go.
I think Decrypto is better than Codenames, but yes. I also think that Decrypto is a much harder sell.
It's less universal than Codenames.
Codenames is very easy.
You can literally play it with anyone.
Yeah, and almost anyone will enjoy it. Whereas yes. Decrypto, the thing I find with Decrypto is people always enjoy Decrypto, but you have to play a whole round, maybe a round and a half, before they start enjoying it.
Yes.
And that is a period of sometimes upwards of 15, 20 minutes because yep. people like might not get it. And unless people have absolute confidence in you, in your suggestion to play it, or they are incredibly devout followers of fun and they're like, no, we'll keep going. That can feel awkward and
yes,
it's a hard sell.
I agree.
I feel like this is more in the space of Codenames, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
In the fact that there is scope for cleverness, especially as we got it wrong and you should have seven cards. I think that's a big change in terms of being able to actually pursue angles rather than firing shots in the dark and hoping you've got a smart
mm-hmm,
ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the thematic fun of doing this sort of semi-seance yes. thing is...
One letter at a time is genius.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, the video I made many years ago about playing werewolf and being like, you know, light the candles.
Right.
Get into like, you know, get the room feeling smoky.
Get the set dressing.
Put on Bram Stoker's Dracula
get
OST.
Get smoky by like just vaping in the room for like 40 minutes beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I feel like
make
this game...
Steamy.
Even though I look at it and I'm like, well, it's not quite as, you know, brain cool thinky as Decrypto, and it's not as smart and mechanical as Crosstalk, but I think that actually, beautiful box, it could be a really solid post-dinner party game
yes.
that people could really have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the right kind of group to pitch it to, I think. It's if you're a big fan of Decrypto, this won't replace it.
No.
And the same for Codenames, I think, as well. But as a little thing that you can, yeah, if you're setting the mood correctly.
It's a delightful object as well. It's a delightful object. It's simple. And I think that like it's one of those games that I can see friends of mine who don't play games a huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
I would show that to them. And then they just want to play that.
Yeah.
And every time they come around, they'd be like, can we play that?
And you'd be like, no.
Yeah. And
I've set
like,
up Food Chain Magnate.
We'll play that. Yeah, we'll play that. But that's not a bad thing, right? Because we are like turbo specialists. We want to devour new ideas.
We do.
We demand increasingly complicated and novel mechanics. And actually, a lot of the time, people just want a nice little simple idea in a nice little box.
They do.
So really, it's pretty decent.
Pretty decent.
Check it out.
Yeah. You know what you should not check out and is not pretty decent?
Dirty Pig!
Yeah, that's not a great intro for poor Dirty Pig on a podcast, but I didn't think it was a great
game.
Tom,
I love this game.
Yeah, well,
I think Dirty Pig is one of the best games ever.
You didn't play it, but you did hear a lot about it.
I didn't play it, no. And also, I don't really know how it's played.
I can explain it to you right now on this podcast, but I'm worried that'll ruin the magic of it, because maybe your favorite thing about this game was just hearing people taking their turns.
Honestly?
Narrating their turns.
People explaining how to play the game, people talking during the game. It's the most fun I've ever had sitting next to people playing a game.
You were playing like quite a complicated crunchy game.
Yeah.
Quite a brutal crunchy game. And we were just
talking
about
pigs. And
someone
very seriously in Canada saying, but how do I make my dirty pigs clean? It's like, well, you can't.
You don't want to. No.
Well, what about my pretty pig? Can my pretty pig get dirtied up? What about if I destroy your barn? Will that affect your pretty pig? And I'm losing it.
Yeah.
it was just such a delightful game to be next to. Mm-hmm. But also I can see that maybe it didn't have perhaps the deepest appeal in the trench.
I think this is a game for children, first and foremost, which is the most important factor in disclaiming games like this. It's for children. It's a game about making sure that you have the dirtiest pigs in the land. You've got three pigs. They start the game squeaky clean. They want to be mucky. So in a way, you're sort of playing the pigs in this game. If you make all your three pigs dirty, mm-hmm. then you win the game straight away. Easy. What do you do on your turn? You just play a card from your hand. Here's the cards you have available. Mud. Make a pig dirty. Nice and simple.
Classic.
Just cover a pig in mud.
We all know how it works.
Filthy, filthy pig.
We've all done it.
Yeah? Great. Second thing you can do, rain. Play a rain card, cleans everyone's pigs wow. around the table.
Everyone's pigs.
Everyone's pigs, which sucks because you want your pigs to be dirty,
yes.
not clean, yes. right? How do you prevent rain? You put them in a barn. If you get a barn card, you play a barn card, you put it on top of your pig. Now your pig is safe from rain. It will stay dirty even in rain.
This yeah? is not how farming works.
It's one barn per
Spending
pig.
Spending a lot of money on infrastructure just to keep these pigs dirty.
Well, no, it's the pigs, I guess, are trying to keep themselves dirty.
Wow.
So they're building a barn,
the
maybe?
The pigs are hiring private contractors.
Yep, to build themselves a
I mean,
barn
honestly,
city.
If pigs could talk and had access to monetary systems, that's probably exactly the sort of toddler nonsense they would do. They are basically...
Pigs
they
are clever.
They are smart, but they are like toddler smart, right? They're like
yeah.
four-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
they're clever. Four-year-olds yeah. are really clever, uh-huh. but they're four-year-old clever. Yeah. In fact, they're very smart, but then they are just silly little
right.
kids.
We're talking about the police, right?
Yeah.
So what else do pigs do in this game? You've got to put them in barns. You've got to clean them, maybe.
You've got to racially profile people.
Racially profile people.
No, you've got lightning. You're talking about lightning
yeah,
that
so
sets
lightning,
fire to people's barns.
Yeah, you play a lightning card. You burn down someone else's barn. Then that pig is susceptible to rain, right? How do you stop your barn getting lightning down? You put a lightning rod on top of it. That's
Which
another card in the game.
Interesting.
It's like, crazy.
Not only do these pigs have access to industrial infrastructure and yes. construction firms, uh-huh. they also have... connections to Zeus.
They have scientific knowledge.
Or they have, yeah, like Tesla towers
Tesla
that allow
towers.
Them to
Yeah,
zap.
That's how it looks like, what it looks like in the game.
Right.
Big stick on top
a
of
a Tesla
the
coil.
Yeah, pretty much. Something like that.
Wow. Is this a direct sequel to Red Alert? Command & Conquer, Red Alert 3.
The other thing you can do is you can play a card that is, it's called like the Farmer card, and it just shows a big like brush with a bunch of suds on it, and that's you go to anyone's pig and you clean that one specific pig. Yeah, I know, it's a silly game.
I love this game.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't want to play it. Yeah, I don't need to play
good.
It
so you yeah, that will clean someone's pig, and that doesn't matter if they have it in a barn or not, because the farmer can just use his
human
hands
walk into a barn
to get into the barn and clean. However, you can play a card that boards up the barn, which is like a bunch of like planks over the barn door, and it has a little picture of a pig like laughing like with a cheeky grin because like the pig has boarded up the barn. There's like a hammer and nails on
I
the
mean,
floor, which
like,
is like the dexterity
like,
of these pigs is crazy.
I feel like this is gonna like should be a sequel to the film Nope.
Yeah,
you
right
know,
sure.
It's like this farmer turning up every day to try and wash the pigs and discovering that the pigs are building barns for
yeah,
themselves
yeah, they're, like,
to
evolving.
Hide so they can stay dirty. It's really weird.
Yeah, it's super weird.
But then
weird.
The card game isn't that weird. It's got kind of Bonanza-y style, colourful.
It's not... Oh, right. Okay, I thought you were going to say
no,
it's like
no,
Bonanza
no, no,
and
no.
mechanics.
I
no, it's not.
I would not dare.
It's like Snap in terms of mechanics, basically. And then we played with the Pig and Amazing expansion, which is... if you go on Board Game Geek, literally every single review is like, it's not an expansion, it's the game. Like, there's, it just
wow.
isn't a game unless you play it with the expansion. And I'd argue it still isn't really a game, even
but
if you play it
the
with
pretty
the expansion.
Pigs.
This is with the pretty pigs. So you can put lipstick on a pig and you can make it a pretty pig. Mm-hmm. And then if you get three pretty pigs, you also win the game. So it's like,
Great.
which you know, which way, Western Man? Which road are you going to, you know, there's
Paragon or Renegade.
In the woods. Exactly. Paragon or Renegade pigs.
Yes.
And you can put lipstick on the pig and then they're pretty. You can make a dirty pig pretty, but you can't make a pretty pig dirty. Those are the
this
rules.
This is why. I think we can probably move on from this, but I just say, I don't think anyone needs to play this game.
Never.
But what you need to do is you need to situate yourself next to some people who
are listening
playing
to
it.
Someone play
because it was probably the most fun I had at the convention was just trying to work out a complicated Euro game whilst people were asking
yeah.
questions about pretty pigs
yes.
and the mechanics of
yeah.
dirtying up a pretty pig.
Yeah. There was a lot of pondering, a surprising amount of pondering pigs in this game for like four-year-olds. I don't know what the age rating is on the box. 18 plus. Yeah. Yeah, these pigs are filthy.
Deeply adult gaming.
That's you're right. I think we've actually talked about Dirty Pig enough. It's a weird little box.
I just like to listen to people talking about it. And we've shared that now.
We've
with
shared
the world.
That. We've so shared that information.
Yeah, maybe just like leave it on a table as like a trap, and then sit and siphon off the joy.
It sounds quite perverse the way if you put it like that.
Well, I think you made that like that. Anyway, I'm gonna move on.
The last thing I know, you're gonna try and move on, because I actually want to say one last thing about Dirty Pig, which I'm probably giving this game a bad rap. It's literally for kids. I think if you're a child, you'd probably really enjoy playing Dirty Pig.
I think you're not wrong.
I don't think I'm wrong. I think I'm right.
No, I think you are right. Yeah.
Thanks.
I agree. Finally, before we clock off on this podcast, I just want to briefly give a mention to the student area. Uh-huh. Of the UK Games Expo.
Yeah.
Now, there were a bunch of different people, a bunch of different universities there, and I think I can't remember the university that had an interesting adaptive game that involved it being some sort of dexterity sort of golfing game where you adaptively added rules every time you played it and the game just got gradually stranger. That was quite cool.
That sounds fun.
I like that.
Can we hear about that game?
And they were making... This was a tiny maquette version they had of it, but they had an actual version they made at the university was like large.
It How
was
big?
Like big.
Big.
Like it was basically the types of ball you... One of the rules you could change would be like, what ball are you using? And
right.
Be like a golf ball or like a tennis ball or like a football.
Or a melon.
Yeah. So we're talking like, you know, physically like mini golf style.
Right.
It had, you know, remits of it. It had like a space for people to completely invent rules. But a lot of it was just about like modularity of being like, you take a turn and then you change your rule.
That sounds fun.
It was fun. And I just want to mention that because I also saw that and it looked cool, but I don't have much to say about that. There was also the University of Glasgow, but no one was at the table when I was there. So sorry about that, Glasgow.
Throwing shade on Glasgow.
It's not their fault. They're probably just having lunch or something.
Or a wee.
Students are allowed to eat and urinate too.
Mm-hmm.
Clap emojis between words. However, I did sit down and look at a couple of games from some University of Warwick students, and I was really impressed just by the endeavor of what had been done. Effectively, they were on a course which was to do with complicated things. That's right. You're scrunching up your head now.
Yeah,
going,
I really am.
I don't know what that course is. And I'll tell you why, Tom. It's because that's not the name of the course. I just don't remember what it was. Effectively, they were making board games to try and inform people or explain quite complicated things from their courses.
I see.
So I got shown a game which was about AI and a game which was about mathematics. And I can't even remember the type of mathematics it was doing.
Polynomials?
That's it.
That's what it was trying to explain to you, wasn't it?
It was trying to explain polynomials to me. And can you guess how well they managed to do that?
Well, you know, it sounds like you're going to throw shade on them and say
no,
their board game didn't even explain any I can't even say the word. Didn't even explain no polynomials to me. But did it? Did you come away from it enlightened?
Well, I came away from it knowing that polynomials existed and being like...
It was raising awareness.
I'm going to look this up.
Did you?
I haven't yet, but I will. and I remember saying repeatedly to the lovely lady who was showing it to me, being like, I'm going to go and look this up. I don't really understand this, but I'm going to go and look this up. And effectively, it was to do with like having almost like infinities.
Right.
To do with like, okay, well, you know, this is basically infinity, but then infinity times one is different to one times infinity. Or like, you know, two times this infinity is different to infinity times two. And the face you're looking at me with now is pretty much the face I had. I was just nodding and nodding and nodding, and they'd be like, oh, but you know this, right? And I'd be like, nope. And then you know this, nope. And then it was like, eventually I was like, aha, yes, I have heard that word
before.
And this was like three or four extrapolations into what they were trying to explain. But it was a very simple game where you just moved around a map collecting resources and then trading resources, but then multiplying resources based on these infinity prospects. And they gave me a demo of the game and showed me how it worked, and it was absolutely impenetrable. It was like, well, of course you have eight here, but by timesing this by this, this reduces this number to nothing, but this one goes up by 16. I didn't understand anything.
I don't understand it at all,
but wow. Like having somebody explain a game which was just like using mathematics, but in a way that I'm just like, I don't have any concept of this, was very exciting and very cool. And it was also honestly adorable. It reminded me of what it was like to be a student, of having somebody who was clearly a mathematics student, clearly very smart.
Yes.
But talking about concepts in a way that they clearly talk to their fellow peers and friends about.
Yes.
In a way that was like, oh, you know this? And I'm like, no, I absolutely do not. I don't have any idea. And that was cool. The other game about AI was actually much more penetrable for me, maybe because I did actually have an understanding of kind of how these systems work. But it was very cool. I really enjoyed the way that basically it was about, it was showing the way that AI networks, neural networks actually work. And it had like, you know, this one person playing as the evil AI cat trying to take over and the other players being the researchers, and it being about having these hidden tokens and it being about these like yes or no, like positive negative pathways of trying to work out, like get from one place to another, where effectively it was just highlighting the fact that effectively the routes that AIs use in terms of neural network, they know about the start and they know about the outcome, but often they don't really understand how neural networks work. Right?
No.
It's like they put the thing into the machine, something comes out the other end.
Because it's gone through so many iterations that you actually don't know what algorithm it's even using to process information.
And working out like the pathways of what were all the yes and no decisions it made to get to the end is a lot more work than just making it do the thing.
Yes.
And this was represented in a kind of a circular board that had a kind of inner core and then an outer mystery of lots of little tokens on nodes that you get to look at and flip and and like, you know, the AI player has more knowledge than the others and the researchers are trying to do it. And it was like, I didn't play the game. The beautiful magic of youth, the guy assured me, he said, it is quite a lot of fun to play. And I was like, I believe you actually. Like, okay, like said with no ego, just like, it is fun. And I'm like, yeah, actually, this looks fun. But I thought that was really smart. And I thought the games, I didn't get to look at the other games for some of the other students, but and I didn't get to speak to that teacher, but I thought it was just a really interesting use of games. And I was like, I just thought, that's really cool that these students basically have been tasked with make, you know, distill these ideas, these mechanics down into something that allows you to explain or convey a complicated idea through the medium.
And then I almost think that along the side of that, like whether or not that kind of, it almost doesn't need to be made fun in the way that a traditional game, you know, you need to make a game like fun to play, because I think the learning experience of itself is kind of the fun, the exploration of a system. Like a lot of the games that I'm interested in at the moment certainly are like games that are systematic in some way or procedural in some way, and the fun of it is just sort of seeing the machine run and the results of what happens and how they spell out. Like we played, I keep referencing this game, played a lot of John Company recently, and that game is, it's so procedural and it's so clockwork in some ways that it's more about players are going to input their own ideas about how this thing should work, and then you just run the simulation and see what happens at the end. Obviously, there's a whole lot of extra stuff going into that, like negotiation and deal breaking, but I think that deal making and deal breaking, but I think that that's, you know, the learning of those games is kind of the joy of it in a way.
Yeah, and it's like we always talk about, like, you know, when games are strongest is when mechanics and themes merge,
right?
In terms of going, well, actually, that action makes sense. That action, like, I can feel that, and you know, the combination of the artwork and the intention and the focus allows for games to shine. But really, actually, if you drill that down to its absolute core of being like, you know, emerging of mechanics and theme, it's the distillation of an idea into mechanics.
Yes.
And that's what it is. It's like, oh, this mechanic is conveying this idea.
Yeah.
And it's explaining something. And often the ideas that are being explained that we connect with and we enjoy are thematic, because it's like, oh yeah, doing this does feel like you're closing the airlock on the other players and flinging them into space, right? Because it's like the mechanics are a conversation with players that allow them to read into things. And often the joy of games is it's showing us things we recognize, it's showing us settings that we know, it's allowing us to have moments that are things that we can relate to already through medium or personal experiences. Whereas I thought this is interesting because it's the same, it's, I think it, I just felt like from an educational perspective, I didn't get a chance to speak to the lecturer or the professor or whatever who had designed this part of the course and brought them along to UK Games Expo. And also shout out to the organizers of UK Games Expo who gave them the space for free, which was just like, what a great thing to do, to be like, let these people showcase these interesting things for people to just have a look at.
Yeah.
Love it. Love all every part of how it ended up being a part of the show. Really, really enjoyed it. But I thought that such a great task to give students. Because really, actually, when it comes down to it, high-level education is all about trying to take very complicated ideas and distill them down into ways that you can explain them clearly, right? Both in terms of the teaching and in terms of the learning. And I mean, that's what education should be, right?
Right.
It's like, how can we convey this incredibly complicated thing in a way that people go, oh, I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that actually making people design a game, especially board games, which need to be distilled down, I thought it's such a cool task and such a really savvy way of trying to communicate to people, and also trying to get students to get their head around what they're trying to communicate and how they can do it with just some little wooden tokens.
Yes.
Really cool.
Cool stuff.
Just cool. So maybe, if you're the person from University of Warwick who runs that course and you happen to be a fan of the podcast, I don't know who you are, but give yourself a pat on the back. Really, really great.
Yeah, they should get in touch. We can have them on the podcast. We can invite them into this room, and they will only be allowed a shower once they've been on the podcast for a certain amount of minutes.
And they can just keep saying words until we recognize a word that we recognize.
And then we go, yep.
Ooh! Okay. And then we continue to beat our hands on, pieces of wood whilst chanting, because we are barbarians.
Don't quite understand where you went with that, but it's fine. We'll keep it. Let's do a sting. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We've been Tom Brewster and Matthew Lees.
We have
two guys who are now going to fight. I mean, we were going to fight to death for the access to the shower.
Someone's just come in and taken the shower.
Housemate has, he's in there right now.
So now we're both going to go and have a shower with Tom's housemate. What a fun surprise for him. we've earned it, and that's what matters.
Yeah, he's done the gracious thing of giving us access to the lounge, which is, space to record a podcast in. We're going to pay him back by lathering him up.
Yeah, and, I feel like this podcast, it's maybe been a little fluffy. I feel like I've had some things that have been quite thought-provoking for me that I've enjoyed talking about.
Sure.
If you feel like listening to this podcast has been hard work, then maybe you've earned yourself a shower.